Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 858. Loot Crate is today's sponsor for this Nerds Podcast. Say, on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and or collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life, or maybe that's you, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. But you forget every month, you forget it's coming, and then it comes, and then it's like a happy surprise. Because there's a different theme, there are new exclusive items that you can only get with Loot Crate. So treat yourself, or treat a loved one, or treat an enemy, and make them a friend. Puzzle them.
I would love that. Someone like, you don't like, you just send them a Loot Crate.
You just send them a thing, just to see what happens.
I love this, but who did this?
Who did this? Yeah. This month they're going primal and unleashing the beasts of some of pop culture's most ferocious franchises, including Overwatch, Wolverine, Jurassic World, Predator, and of course the monthly tee and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. When the cutoff happens, it is over. So go to lootcrate.com/nerdist and enter the promo code NERDIST to save 10% off any new subscription. Thanks to Loot Crate for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Katie Levine, what's in your wallet?
So I got a cool one for people that live in L.A. There is a organization called the Friends of L.A. River, and they do a yearly river cleanup. And it's last year they had 9,000 volunteers.
Oh, my God.
And they hauled off more than 70 tons of trash. And this year they want to do even more.
Suck it, trash.
Right. The dates are April 15th, 22nd, and 29th. Those are all Saturdays. You can find out more info or sign up at folar.org/cleanup. This sounds so much fun. I'm absolutely going to do one of these dates because that just sounds like something I would love to do.
Excellent.
To get up there and pick up trash. And also, Dark Knight Live is a podcast about arts professionals in Chicago where they get to talk about who they are, where they came from, and they just get to be themselves. It sounds really awesome, and you can find it on iTunes and everywhere that podcasts are.
Fantastic. I have a little something that I would like to mention, Katie Levine, which is the ID10T Festival.
Yes.
ID10T Fest.
I saw you announce this on Twitter today.
I did. So a couple of years ago, I was doing this tour with the Oddball Comedy Tour, which we hit amphitheaters around the country. It was really fun. And at that time, the company, SGE, who was working with Live Nation on that, said, hey, would you want to do your own one of these? And I was like, yeah, sure. And they go, okay. And then I didn't hear anything about it for almost 2 years. And then a year ago, last February, they came to me and they said, okay, what do you think? What would you want to do? And I said, well, I guess if I'm thinking about it, I've been to a lot of conventions. Mm-hmm. I've been to Comic Cons. I've been to Maker Faires. I've been to music festivals, performed at comedy festivals, and you know, I think it'd be really fun if someone just kind of mashed all, I haven't seen anyone mash all those together.
No.
And I don't know if that's because there's zero demand for that sort of thing or if just the right person didn't connect all those dots. So I said, you know, I would probably have a main stage with music and a comedy tent and then, you know, but all of the exhibitor booths would be like a Comic-Con. So it'd be like a Comic-Con by day. And then as the day went on, you know, there'd be panels and podcasts. Then the comedy tent would start in the late afternoon, and then that would kind of dovetail into the music. And so there was always something to do.
Yeah.
cosplay contests, you know, all that sort of thing. So they said yes.
That's like something for everybody.
I hope. So that's what we're doing. ID10T is going to be June 24 and 25 at the Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, which is in Silicon Valley.
I used to go there when I lived.
You did?
Yeah, I went to concerts there when I was younger and I lived up there.
It's a great venue. We had a great show there for Oddball.
I used to go to a festival there called BFD that Live 105 put on.
Live 105.
Yeah.
Our bands, we have Weezer, OK Go, Car
what?
Seat Headrest, Girl Talk, TV on the Radio, Crystal Castles, Animal Collective, The Mowglis, bunch more. The Comedy Stage, Dimitri Martin, Nikki Glaser, Michael Ian Black, April Richardson, Bronger, Hampton Yunt, Garfunkel and Oates, Posehn, Michael Che, Yasser Lester.
Oh my God.
And then there's
That's a great lineup.
And then there's an EDM tent, which is going to be like the cosplay tent. And I mean, it's, and then a bunch of, you know, Skybound's going to be there, Boom. But it's just going to be really fun. I think it's going to be really fun.
Literally something for everyone.
I hope, or at least anyone who likes stuff in our sector. but you know, it just seemed like, why not try it? Why not, you know, why not see if there's something fun that we can do? So please come out. You can go to ID10TFest.com. It's ID and then the number 10TFest.
Yes.
.com. So thank you for listening to me ramble on about my festival. I'm super excited about it. You know what I'm super excited about? Just having that fucking pass that means I can go wherever I want. Whenever you're at a festival, you're like, fuck, I really want the God pass.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about
you
that.
You should make it say the God pass for you.
That'd be a great idea. That'd be a really great idea.
You can do it. It's your festival. You
fuck your rock.
Fuck you
I can do
want,
whatever
man.
I want. I don't got to listen to you. This episode is Acker and Blacker, Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. And if you don't know who they are, you should. Acker and Blacker created Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is not only a live show that ran for like 10 years in Los Angeles, but it also is a podcast that we put out on Nerdist.
You can listen to all of it.
Two of the smartest, funniest guys I know. And also Ben Blacker hosts the writers panel, which Nerdist puts out. And he's, you know, hundreds of episodes of talking to writers and showrunners.
And it's so interesting, especially if you're interested in writing. You got to listen to it.
But I adore these guys, and I'm so glad that we were able to have them on, because they're writing they have a new book series right now. The first book, Star Wars Join the Resistance, which is a Star Wars book for young adults, is available March 8th. And, you know, listen to their podcast, too. But I adore these guys.
They're great.
They're
amazing.
Great. Two of the most talented writers.
And funny.
Fucking, they're both hilarious, but goddamn Ben Acker. Just... I see his face forming like he's about to say something and I start laughing. So these guys are on. This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com, which saves you time and money, allows you to grow your business, mail any letter, any package using your computer. Your mail carrier picks it up. Avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards, envelopes to packages, domestic or international. You know, April Richardson has a bit in her act where she, because we just performed in Irvine this weekend, and she has a bit about how a teenage girl legit went up to her in a post office and said, excuse me, how do I mail a letter? And April had to explain to her, like, you put a stamp on, like, she had to explain
oh
the
my
whole
God.
Process. But, you know, that poor kid wouldn't have to do that if she just had stamps.com. Just print
wow.
it out, put it on the envelope, mail carrier picks it up. You know, it's not, you don't have to deal with it anymore. It's convenient 24/7. Stamps.com brings all the services of the post office right to your fingertips. Buy and print any official U.S. postage for any letter, package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. They're going to send you a digital scale. You know, you too can join the stamp service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist. That's stamps.com into the promo code Nerdist. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Katie Levine, it is now time to begin Nerdist Podcast number 858, which has a very nice palindromic quality to it, with Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, which has a very nice rhyming quality to it. Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Thank you for having us.
You are welcome.
We're just playing with your toys.
Welcome to the... Oh, is this my book?
For me? Mm-hmm. Your book for you.
Star Wars, Join the Resistance.
Or is it Star, Join the Resistance Wars?
Yeah, Dealer just like shows. The title.
Okay, great.
Just like the movies. Star, Empire Strikes Back Wars.
Star, The Force Awakens Wars.
Mm-hmm. I know one. Keep Hope Alive, Star Wars Episode 4.
Keep Hope Alive, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Keep Hope Alive. Have you ever seen a Star Wars movie?
Yeah, I mean...
No, well, that was weird. You just shook your head no. Well... But you wrote a Star Wars book, so you've never actually seen a Star Wars movie?
I know that Star Wars thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
You saw the Wikipedia page.
I've been to Prague. I know that thing.
Everybody, there's people listening who are like, wait, he really didn't fucking watch Star Wars? What a fucking...
I don't like space. I don't buy it.
Yeah, it's not great.
Hmm. Well, you love people to hear you scream.
What's funny is that I think a lot of people don't know that when Star Wars came out... A New Hope was not the title. Was not the title of Star Wars until I think like 1982 or something. Like, it was just Star Wars.
That Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that Star. Some Star Wars.
And it's still so hard to talk about all of them when you're like, no, the first one. You mean episode one? No.
No.
Star Wars. Well, they're all Star Wars.
Well, and on Talking Dead a couple weeks ago, there was a clip of Andrew Lincoln talking about, because something happens on the show.
Spoiler.
Where he get, yeah, I know it's a spoiler. Well, something happens on the show that is analogous to something that happens in a Star Wars movie, and he said, "Oh, this is just like in Star Wars." And I think he was referring to something that happened in Return of the Jedi. So I got pretend mad. I was like, "Oh, I think Andy meant Return of the Jedi," and people were like, you know, that is a Star Wars movie. And I go, yeah, but you wouldn't say something happened in Star Wars. Like, mm-hmm. You can't refer to specific events with the overall umbrella term.
No.
Like, you can say they're part of the Star Wars universe. Right.
You'd say that is like something that happened in the Star Wars universe.
And like,
or in Return of the Jedi.
Maybe they meant it was this thing that happened when they were in the trash compactor in Star Wars. Like, no, I don't think that's what... But it was funny to get like in a fake... fake mad about it. Mm-hmm. But then have people think that I was legitimately really calling Andrew Lincoln out, who is... The nicest guy in the world, and this is where I'm going to, like, throw down the gauntlet.
If the actually people had a sense of humor, they wouldn't be the actual.
Exactly.
But it's fun. It's
Which
fun.
Is my favorite Stephen King.
It's fun.
The actually
yeah,
people.
The actually people. Uh-huh. The actually people. That's a great title.
It really
Thank
is.
You.
That's your next comic book.
Right.
The actually people. Here, the door's not closed. I'm going to close the door just so it's not.
No, it was harder.
The door closing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was too hard.
It sure does.
Thank you.
I love that the dog didn't even move a muscle.
She's all out of fucks to give.
She doesn't have any. Basically, that dog is the embodiment of Air Supply's whole catalog. That dog is all out of love.
Fantastic.
Just nothing. It's just that dog is on impulse power right now. Like, there's
people love that dog. I don't know.
What have you guys been up to besides this? I'm sure people know, just in case they don't, Ben and Ben, Acker and Blacker, creators, writers, masters of Thrilling Adventure Hour.
True.
That's us.
Probably one of the best live shows that you ever could possibly see if you had a chance to go see Thrilling Adventure Hour. And also Nerds Writers Panel.
True.
Which is, I mean, how many episodes?
Oh my God. We celebrated 300 last year.
Oh my, that's fucking nuts.
Yeah. I think one of the first times, and I think we've talked about this in the past, but one of the first times you did Thrilling, second or third time, I had just started doing the Writers Panel.
For HSX.
And you were like, hey, I'm starting to put some other podcasts on Nerdist. If you're like, yeah, that would be
great. You guys want to do
this? It was fantastic.
So awesome. How many... I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, over 500 writers I've talked to.
That's fucking nuts. So what have you learned throughout this process?
Oh, no.
We don't have time for that.
I'll take a break.
Yeah, you can take a break. You can go watch Star Wars.
What's that?
It's a Star Wars movie.
About
Listen, some wars in the stars.
You want to watch 4, 5, 6, 7,
no,
1,
no,
2, 3.
It's a little confusing. Uh-huh. 4 is actually 1.
Okay. No, that makes sense. It's just the rest of it. How do you have a war in a star? It's too bright. It's got to be really bright.
I know. It sounds like you can't have a war in a star. It's sort of a general...
Like, how many years does it take to see the war? The light from the war.
It's you're not seeing it. I mean,
we're only seeing it now.
You're seeing it on Earth, but you're not seeing it like in an astronomical way. Like, you're seeing it as a movie.
This sounds like a real hard movie to understand.
No, it's
how many
simple.
Degrees
it's
in science do I need
you just
to
need
understand?
4 or 5 PhDs in astrophysics and cosmology.
I get the fourth one first.
You get the yeah. Uh-huh. If you get here's your PhD card. If
sure.
you do 3, you get a fourth one for free. You know?
Sure.
That's how that works. You get PhD cards
and a yogurt.
Wow.
But
hi.
So just out of curiosity,
yes.
And
just some high level things that you pick, because I've noticed that there are consistencies. In mm-hmm. a lot of the people that I've talked to, like a lot of the same themes come up, a lot of the same, you know, people who are successful or make, you know, who are able to make their dreams manifest into real things. There are consistencies, mm-hmm. even though their paths are all a little bit different. So what are some consistencies that you found from all these writers that you've talked to?
I think the biggest things have been do what you care about. You know, there's so much failure and there's so much rejection in this business that if you're not working on something you genuinely care about, it's not worth all of that heartache.
Right.
And the other is be nice.
Yeah.
It's just like you meet so many people, and never mind the sort of mercenary aspect where, you know, you may meet them 10 years later and they could be able to help you out, but just be nice. It helps with getting jobs. It helps with, you know, really,
longevity.
It's the journey, not the destination, in a thing like that. So you may as well have a good time.
Absolutely.
And not hold on to anger.
You can get away with being a dick for a while, but the second people don't have to hire you, you know, then, you know.
I think that's really true.
And so it's just not, it doesn't do anyone any good. The business is fucking hard enough. It's hard enough.
Yeah.
Than to get in the way.
Absolutely.
And what are yours? Like you heard from.
It's very, very similar. It's, you know, following what you're passionate about. People seem to not really. I don't want to say like not take no for an answer, but at least mm-hmm. there's a persistence that's involved.
Yeah.
And there's a being able to figure out how to turn negatives into positives somehow, or like learn from mistakes, people with long-term success. But a lot of it is like focusing on what you're passionate about, no matter what that is. But I always want to know, especially from writers, how they get past that sort of wall that, you know, like when you get to the point where, and when you guys were doing Thrilling, well, I guess you guys didn't really have a lot of time to really think about it too much.
No,
because
it was a moving train.
It was a monthly show.
Yeah.
And like a fucking full... Was it 90 minutes?
It was about, 85, 90 minutes.
A 90-minute full show.
A
like
90-minute
hour. Scripted, you know, like three separate stories.
A new 80-page script every month.
A new 80-page script every month.
For 10 years. That's it. When we stopped, the month that we stopped and we went to see a Paul F. Tompkins show at Largo that week before, where we didn't have to replace actors last minute. We didn't have to go over the script with the band. We didn't have to scramble. I had a nice brunch. Like it was only then that I realized, oh, this was hard.
Yeah.
You're so in it that you don't realize. And we had fun 90% of the time, you know, like, I mean, of any episode, like most of it was a blast.
Yeah. I mean, Thrilling was a full radio play with a full band, amazing cast, folks like Paul F. Tompkins and Nathan Fillion was in a lot of them.
We had amazing guest stars.
Padgett Brewster. It was Busy Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
It was an incredible cast. So well done. Had such a following. People, I loved that this culture developed around it. People would get dressed up.
Oh yes,
like dapper dressed up to come to Thrilling, and it was a real experience, which I feel like is very unique. An experience is different from just a show.
Yeah,
and there was a real culture behind it, and that must have. I mean. You'd say that it was a relief to not have to do it, but it must have been hard to let it go.
Did I say relief? I didn't mean to. It was realizing how much work it was. It was looking up going, oh, now I'm 40.
Right. Right.
And it was. I mean, like, we stopped doing the monthly show in 2015, and then we could not let it go. We kept doing sort of sporadic shows. But
like Christmas shows.
Christmas shows.
Sketch Fest.
Earth Day.
Uh-huh. Any excuse.
A million of them.
Well, because Earth Day is thematically relevant.
Of course.
To the show. Because it happens on Earth, not in space.
That's exactly right. So
Ben doesn't like space stuff.
Yeah.
You have to understand.
So war, it's like there are wars that there. Stars just mean, like Star Wars just means like it's in space.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not in our galaxy. Okay. It's in a galaxy very far, far
then
away.
How do they even know about it?
Well, that's a fair point.
Is it happening concurrent?
I'm going to say wormholes.
Oh, gross.
You're thinking of something else. You're thinking of a different franchise.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's a totally different franchise. I was just guessing that that's how we would know. We would just peer through a wormhole.
My dog has wormholes.
See this duck? Well, you should... You can see into another galaxy yeah. through his poop. That's actually kind of a great. There's a Rick and Morty storyline right there in there somewhere of like an intergalactic vet.
Yep.
And the dog has wormholes.
Oh, he's got wormholes.
And then they have to go.
Is that Rick or Morty?
That's Rick or Morty.
That would be Rick.
Perfect.
No, Morty's really. Ah, jeez, Rick. But Rick would be. So you were more Rick.
You don't have to audition. You're already in.
Tell them I just want to.
You want to do it?
I already did.
Yeah.
Okay. I already did. Right. Are you Rick or Morty?
I sent Roiland.
I was like, listen, I don't. I'll just be a guy in the background that's like, I'm an alien. Like, I don't give a shit. You know.
Fair.
I like that.
Yeah. I don't give a shit. But how do you guys? I give a shit.
Yeah.
I give a lot of shits. I give. I'm not like this dog.
Three times as many shits as
three times. But this dog gives zero shits, so three times zero is zero.
I'm not a math guy.
Yeah, I know, but zero times anything is zero.
Explain. Well, pull out the chalkboard.
Ben, did you see hidden figures?
If you have zero, no matter how many times you have zero, it's always going to be zero. Zero can't times anything.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Okay, that's one opinion.
That's just math. God damn it. So you don't know math, you don't know Star Wars.
No.
How do you get out of the house every day?
I know pants, I know shoes.
He's a real pants and shoes man.
I know. No pants, no shoes, no service.
Here's the order.
Yeah.
Pants, then shoes.
How Never long did you take to figure that out?
Oh, I just read it online.
Okay, so you know how to work the internet.
Mm-hmm. That's not math.
Yeah.
Prove it.
It might be magic.
It's ones and zeros. It's kind of mathematical.
All right.
He doesn't believe in that stuff.
All right. It does work, though. I mean, like, a lot of it does work.
Yeah,
you know?
You click on it.
Yeah, okay.
What are we doing?
Is the book promoted? Katie, start rolling.
Yeah. Oh, we're not recording.
No.
I'm sorry. This was just for us to hang out.
Of course.
Yeah. This is.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. In order to hang out in the new millennium, you got to have a podcast.
I think you'll find out these microphones are open to anything. So that's pretty great. Please don't worry.
We're recording from inside the house.
That's right. But how do you guys, how have you learned to break through that? You know, there must have been times where you're like, I don't have anything to say. I can't. You know, it's like your brain is the end of a toothpaste tube where you're just trying to fold up the, and mush out any little bit and suck on the end of the tube just to get enough paste to get a little foam.
That is a great analogy.
How do you get the foam out of the paste?
I don't think it ever really happened with Thrilling,
no.
Again, because it was a moving train. Like, yeah. We had to have a new script every month.
And we love breaking story.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best part. So figuring out the serialized arcs of Sparks was always the easy and fun and had something going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then for Beyond Belief, which was like the Thin Man with Ghosts segment that we did with Paul and Padgett, it was like we'd come with too many ideas. We'd sit down with like, what do you want to play with?
Which monster haven't we seen yet?
Yeah. And then like it just came. And that's sort of how we've approached all of the stuff we've done. Like, we haven't done stuff that we're not excited to do for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, like this Star Wars book was like, oh, we have 40 years of ideas for this book. Like, I've been waiting for this my whole life. And they pitched us a premise, and then for us, it was just like, what are characters we would love to see in this universe? And then, what are the toys of Star Wars that we want to play with?
Is the Hammerhead in here?
No.
No.
It mostly takes place on the Resistance base right before Force Awakens.
Got it.
So we were sort of limited to those characters, but you know Admiral Akbar is in there.
What?
Oh, yep. Yeah. No, Admiral Akbar features big in there.
He does.
It's Akbar doing Akbar shit?
The kids in the book. So it's about a bunch of kids who join the Resistance.
They want to fly the X-Wings, but they're not ready yet. It's Goonies in Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Our main character is just a Admiral Akbar fanboy. He's so excited to meet him. Yeah. Like that's the hero of
Luke
the rebellion.
Luke Skywalker. Leia's great, but Akbar, man. That's him right over there.
Yeah. So it was fun doing stuff like that.
Do they ever make him say it's a trap? In here?
I can't remember if we say it in there.
I
think we went around it. We found another joke to do around it, which is what we did with a lot of like Star Wars you know, phrases and things like that. It's like, what's a version of it you haven't seen before?
Right. So this is an ample book. It's 200 pages.
But it's for children. But let's be serious.
It's middle grade is how they describe it.
Yeah, but
that's the age group. It's not the quality of the book.
I'm not going to read it.
I mean, No,
I think you'll enjoy it.
I mean, I'm still going to...
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Man, let's not put labels on what age group should read this.
Oh, no, it's for everybody. It's for us.
We wrote it for us. Grown men in their 40s should not read this.
We absolutely wrote it for us. Like, we never thought about who is the 7th or 8th grader who's going to read it. It's... What do I want to see in this, you know? And then if there wasn't even stuff from the editors that was like, you have to walk this back.
Right. I only say that to explain that it is 200 pages, but a big font.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that was so great about Thrilling is it sort of had that bit of Simpsons magic where if you didn't understand any of the stratified layers of jokes that were going on, there was a stratum for everyone. If you were a kid, you could watch it and be completely entertained.
Yeah.
And we
love that kids would come to the show or even at conventions dressed as these socialite drunk characters. It was so funny.
But there's also, like, if you get the Thin Man, if you get the references, that's a layer. If you get any of the subtext, that's another layer. I mean, it was so well done. And I remember, who was the first person... I can't remember who the first person to tell me about it. It might have been Paul F. About Thrilling when you guys were still doing it at M-Bar.
Yeah.
Back when Comedy Death Ray was at M-Bar and you guys were doing that. And he was like, well, it's like a sci-fi serialized radio play. And I was like, okay, I think I understand.
Little did you know, it was pretty much for you.
it was 112% for me.
Yeah.
That's how percentages work.
No, I get that. That's obvious.
So looping back around to this question, all of these incredible writers, I mean, all these showrunners and people who created all the things that everyone loves and have stood the test of time, what is their...
And some who haven't.
Some who haven't, but what have been some of their secrets for, you know, pushing through?
I think it really is. I mean, it's like Ben said, it's not getting discouraged and remembering why you do this, whether that is because you love it. Ideally, that's what it is. But maybe it's you're not qualified to do anything else,
right.
Which is how we often feel. You know, like it comes up a lot that the people who make it are the people who persisted. You know, like and you know this. I mean, this is how it is. And comedy is like... It takes 10 years to be an overnight success.
Yes.
You know, and it's the same in writing. It's, you know, we've been at this for a long time and we kind of did our thing, but we haven't had a show of our own, a TV show of our own. So when we do, it's going to be like, where did these guys come from?
Right.
We've been right here the whole time.
The entire time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sort of funny how just... if someone hasn't heard of you yet, they just assume you didn't exist before.
Yeah.
Well, you could just come out of the woodwork? Yeah, I came out of the woodwork doing a monthly, you know.
Right. And it's a crazy thing because there are, like, there's an audience for Thrilling. There's an audience for the comics we do, for the stuff we do.
Written 10,000 pages of scripts.
Oh, yeah, we got our Gladwells in.
You got your Gladwells in? Well, that's interesting that you know Malcolm Gladwell.
I'm a reader.
Yeah.
I read, like, every podcast, so.
No, but you can't read a podcast. And you only get
a lot of transcripts
that your shoes go on after your pants.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's totally the
after.
Makes sense.
Right?
Did you read a book about that?
I read a podcast.
It was a fun, clever nod, I think, in Sherlock. But I think was a difficult one for me to swallow in the updated, you know, like in the Benedict Cumberbatch version, where he didn't know, he didn't understand anything about our solar system or something. And I think his justification was, you know, like, oh, he's too focused on, you know,
the
what he was
Earth
supposed
stuff.
To yeah, 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 exactly.
Well, you didn't want to get all Doctor Who-y in your
Sherlock. So bad. Yeah, I want to so bad. What if his mind palace is a TARDIS, you guys? Huh? Come on, it's right there. Maybe that's the hidden clue. What if the Mind Palace is inside the TARDIS, and that means that Doctor Who is basically just an extension of his subconscious, And that whole universe exists inside Sherlock's mind. I've just connected the two shows.
You also called him Doctor Who.
No, not I didn't call the character Doctor
Who. Okay.
I was talking about the
I just don't want you to get it yelled at.
No. Listen, of all people, believe me, I know. You know what's interesting is that Capaldi calls him Doctor Who. Like, the older generation of people who watched Who in the 60s, they refer to the character as Doctor Who, even though...
Really?
Modern day fans do not say Doctor Who, and you also do not abbreviate Doctor.
No.
But the old school people do. And I think they're just like, what are these fucking kids and their rules?
That's really funny.
Yeah.
I did not realize that.
Yeah.
I think the abbreviating of Doctor is going to come back around because of Twitter. I think you're going to have to abbreviate it.
No.
Save those characters.
It totally survived. Twitter's been around for what? 8 years? 10 months?
10 months?
Yeah.
But you,
I think let's just all talk about things like with just made up facts like we don't really know.
This is the world we live in.
Most facts. Fit podcast.
That's true. Isn't it crazy now? To me, I mean, we really do live in a strange matrix where it just doesn't.
Let's not get sad.
Facts like just don't matter anymore, and I don't even just mean politically. I just mean for anything.
Yeah.
That. There's a people don't care. People only care what they want to believe, and you could say anything, and a percentage of people that will be their reality, and that will be true. And you could show them proof that what they believe isn't true. You'd be like, "Well, here's a video of the thing that you
believe." Yeah, who made that video?
Yeah, exactly.
And what's in it for them? Follow the money. Yeah. It's really Woodward and Bernstein's fault.
And then a percentage of those people will still go, "No, fuck you," because
the videos are biased.
I have my own confirmation bias,
medium.
And I don't really care what there's so much willful ignorance at the moment where people are just like rushing to. Yeah. Not the truth, as it were, and then it doesn't matter. And again, this isn't even about politics. This is about everything because of the internet. It is such a strange time.
And the internet is where you can find the true thing.
but it's where you can also find all the things.
Uh-huh. To some degree,
the higher results in Google, right?
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, right. That's how you do it.
I wanted to pitch a show. Called IRL, and the whole point of the show was you'd find people who violently supported something, and then you would prove to them by tracing back source, peeling all the source layers back, that they actually believed the opposite of what they thought they believed because they didn't source their information properly, and they,
But the peeling,
oh my god, that's a great idea.
The peeling back is the really interesting thing to me because it is. I think if you take people in these sort of micro steps of let me disprove this small piece of it, and then you can build on that to the next piece.
Right.
You can't just come at someone and say the thing you believe isn't true.
Right.
Here's why.
Right.
It has to be these series of really small steps, and we have short attention spans, or we're too lazy.
Well,
I don't know what it is.
Everyone is an information outlet now.
Yeah.
And, for better or for worse, infrastructures do have checks and balances in place that are supposed to, filter out, find, fact check, really. But people don't have those infrastructures, and humans are flawed, and humans generally only express things as they apply to them and the baggage that they have, and that is the world is a reflection of their own self-image and baggage. And so when you have things being taken factually through that incredibly clouded filter, it's at times billions. I see stuff all the time online that I know for a fact. Because they're about things that I work on, and people assert with such, this is the how. I know that's not how it is, but that's, but now a percentage of people are going to believe that, and then they're going to have their carbon copy of that, which is going to have some resolution loss and fidelity loss, and so on.
Just like the Catholics and the Protestants.
I mean, just like... No, I think it's more like multiplicity, the society. Yeah. Where it's like,
which is a great sequel.
Right, everybody's got a piece of pizza in their wallets in that one.
Yep.
You bring me a monkey, Steve?
An entire state of Doug Fours. Pizza in the wallet. Oh, so good.
I got pizza.
I like pizza.
I like pizza too.
One of Michael Keaton's finest performances.
And I saw the best thing use, the other night. I wanted to say him just so badly.
So good.
The one of the most amazing things about that is I don't know if it's on DVD, but if you get the VHS,
oh, yeah.
It is the pan and scan thing you've ever seen. Like it is
when they show it on TV, it has that too.
It's amazing because like you can just see like the edges of the screen.
Now, Ben, we should say Ben believes Multiplicity is a documentary.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know why more Michael Keatons aren't making more movies. Well,
because once you get to the second or third generations, like
put them in comedies.
but by that time,
President Mom.
But by that,
you wouldn't watch that movie.
Is that the sequel to Mr. Dad?
Mom.
President Mom. Yeah. I will sequel any Michael Keaton movie.
Did you say Mr. Dad?
Yeah, was that right? That's the other sequel. They did two. They did President Mom and Mr. Dad, starring Terry Garr as a stay-at-home dad.
And Senator Werewolf.
Sure.
We can only meet during a full moon. We can only convene Congress.
We really just have like 6 good hours to solve all these problems.
And the big problem is our war with those vampires.
Stop filibustering.
Look, I get it, okay? You want to outlaw silver bullets, but we have to fix the economy first.
The Second Amendment says.
Yeah. Half of those people don't want to outlaw sex.
We've already shut down the Coors factory, which, of course, is
the silver bullet.
And they all want a keg of beer.
They do, yeah.
From Teen Wolf.
Which I always get conflated with Take the Fucking Elephant from Darkman. It's the same, I think, the same voice effect.
What was that?
Take the Fucking Elephant!
People know.
I don't remember that.
That's when
I love Darkman.
Yeah, he's starting to have his psychotic break.
Was it a stuffed animal?
Yeah.
It
was, okay.
It was a carnival game that he that he won for her, but it got a little weird.
Take the Fucking Elephant.
Right. I want a keg of beer.
I don't know if Take the Fucking Elephant is the same as Give Me a Keg of Beer.
Well, call in.
Is it?
Well, are we taking calls?
You know the number.
Not.
What's the number here?
It was 1-855.
Yeah, 1-855.
That's too many digits for your numbers, but it doesn't matter. Just dial it anyway. Hey, we got the band Zoom. We're having a pretty good time. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Pizza Wallet. Pizza Wallet. That's a great idea, actually, a pizza wallet where you can keep, if it were lined with some sort of like foil lining, you just keep it in your pocket.
Is that a great idea?
Call in. Let us know if you think that's a great idea.
Do you want to take that to Shark Tank?
How do pants work? How do pants work? Give us a call.
The wide end is on top. The two little ends, they're on the bottom. I should say, for some of your audience, and it's not about them being your audience, just people listening to this for how to put on pants and shoes. Socks before shoes, guys.
Please. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the rhyme, shoes. Socks before shoes?
Never sicker.
Never sicker.
Or sailors take warning.
I think it's the sailor one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sailors get sicker.
Mm-hmm.
And then shoes before
thank you for your service, sailors.
I wish you guys had been on sooner.
You mean this morning before you woke up?
I'm so sorry. It took 7 years to get you on the podcast.
We didn't have anything to talk about before now.
Well, you had Thrilling Adventure Hour.
That's fine.
You had the Writer's Podcast. So what is it? Has that opened any doors? Did Thrilling open doors? Did the Writer's Podcast open any doors?
Yeah, Thrilling for sure. In fact, the Star Wars book came about because... The editor, one of the sort of the big group editor for Lucasfilm Books, was a Thrilling Adventure fan.
And the whole office was.
It was
great.
I don't want to put that on all of them.
I'm going to say it here so it's on the record. Everyone likes us over there.
But he – well, you can tell.
Yeah, they were talking about an idea and they were internally like, what's the tone? And they said, well, The Tick or Sparks Nevada. And then who should we get to write it? Why not those Sparks Nevada guys? So,
guys like those.
Yeah.
Well, and he was like, could they do that? I'm like, yeah, no, of course we can.
Yeah, they called us up and we had this conversation and we went, they asked us if we'd be interested in writing books for them. And we said, do we have to get off the phone and pretend to talk about it? Can we just say yes?
Because, yeah. We want to do this.
So is this the first in a series of books?
Yes. This is the first of four for this series, Join the Resistance. And it's fun. Like, I think it has the stuff that you talked about that Thrilling has, which is like the layers that people can enjoy, the sort of all ages fun that I think Thrilling was, despite often being dark. There weren't swears in that.
No,
show.
It wasn't dirty. It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you get it, you get it. But yeah, we like Thrilling. The people who know Thrilling and like Thrilling, and so has like that has opened doors for
us. When did you come up with Thrilling? How did you come up with Thrilling?
It's
a very complicated.
We stumbled into it.
You did.
We kind of did.
We wrote a feature of Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, and then read the feature in Blacker's living room with some of the actors that would, most of the actors that would be in the original cast, and then it was I had been working as a writer on Paul's monthly show, the Paul F. Tompkins Show, and so kind of had the ins and outs of what that entailed. And so the radio conceit meant that people get to hold the scripts in their hands and not memorize, no blocking, and it gave us the deadline and put our stuff in front of an audience. So it was win-win-win-win-win.
Yeah.
And the radio conceit specifically, it was something we had always talked about doing with Sparks.
Yeah, I think because it was genre stuff. Like, it was a space western, and it was this thin man with ghosts, and like they just all sort of lent themselves to that medium.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it was practical.
Yeah.
And then like we threw it up in 2005 and did a few months as a trial, and it was really fun. And you know, it took probably 6 months, 8 months to sort of come together
to coalesce with the sound effects and getting the sound effects guy Joel Spence and getting the band that we to score the thing instead of hastily making a pair of CDs for a sound guy at M-Bar who didn't really have the
M-Bar wasn't really M-Bar was wasn't tiny, set up. So it wasn't really set up for like Largo the Coronet was really the perfect space for all of that.
That felt
and
like
vibe wise too, it's the perfect space.
The big red curtain and like it just felt like coming home.
We had to get a curtain man.
That's right.
A curtain puller. You needed a curtain puller.
We did. A union curtain puller. But yeah, like those first few months of Thrilling, I think we knew everyone in the audience. They were friends or friends of friends. And then maybe after a year or so, it just started taking on a life of its own. And like we got a couple of nice write-ups. And we also started having guest stars who would help get the word out. And then by the time we got to Largo, which was 5 years in, like it was a long time we were at M-Bar. And then we went to Largo, which was 2.5 times the size. And we were really worried about filling it, but it also – the vibe was amazing there. And so it was a little bit of relearning, but
– yeah, it changed the intimacy of the – it went from a small supper club to 2.5 times the size. And it was like from a writing and from a performing standpoint, like you can't whisper anymore, you know?
Do you want to do more film stuff, television stuff? What is your ideal situation? You know, if you could do whatever you wanted, what would it
TV
be?
Has always TV, been the thing.
We love it.
Yeah, I feel like we came up, or the big influences were like Buffy and The West Wing, and everything we do is a combination of those because they're about smart people working together and emotional drama, and like you can only do that in a sort of prolonged storytelling format.
Yeah, like if the TV gets to be long form, like if your characters can only exist in the frame of a movie, amp them up, make them more interesting characters.
Like, I feel like I'm seeing a lot of series now that are, you know, in as much as cable television really created this revolution that seemed to absorb a lot of independent film mentality. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of great 5-episode series that are stretched to like 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And then so where I watch stuff and I go, okay, this looks cool, but something needs to fucking happen. Yeah. So what is it that you think is going on? Because I know I try to be very forgiving because I go, well, it's hard to make stuff and it's difficult to parse something out over like a 10 episode arc.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is happening when you see something that just sort of like, oh, that this is kind of a repeat of the last episode, or they haven't really landed a big thing yet. They're still sort of dragging the carrot for the audience. How are they going to pay this off? You know. So what do you think is happening?
It comes up quite a bit on the Writers Panel podcast, and I think what we kind of come to is a lot of the people making TV right now, especially these highly serialized like cable dramas did not come up in highly serialized cable dramas. They came up in episodic network shows. Mm-hmm. And so that was the way they've been trained to make TV. So they know how to tell stories. They're great storytellers, but there's a huge difference between a one and done or even sort of light serialization that something like even Friends did, you know, or like L.A. Law used to do. And the heavy, heavy serialization that Netflix does or that AMC does. And I think they're not bridging that gap. You know, they have to relearn how to tell what is in essence a 10-hour story.
Right.
And it's a hard thing to do. I don't know. I also look at it and think like, how do you have 13 episodes. How do you possibly have filler? Because I feel like we would cram so much into any right. given episode. Well,
but we want to play with all the characters.
Right.
Like, but now the show is, like you're talking about is like, you know, like we have to solve a murder, one murder, not a murder every episode. There's a murder this season, mm-hmm. right? And so if it's not really about that murder, then it might feel
like were there a walk more around. Were there more plot centric shows? Like I look at something like Broadchurch, mm-hmm. which I think was 10 episodes that first season and had no filler because yes, it was about this murder investigation. That was the plot of the series, but what the show was interested in were the characters. It wanted to explore in depth every character and then tie it to
that had a Doctor Who.
It sure did. Why do you think I watched it?
I mean, of course.
Did you watch American Version? Aren't you a big Rory?
Grace Point?
I watched a little bit.
Yeah, but it wasn't Broadchurch for you?
No.
It wasn't Broadchurch.
And the second season of Broadchurch did it just as well. And I think a lot of British series, because that's
the model.
That's the model. They make six episodes. They make eight episodes.
Because you're basically making a 10-hour movie.
Yeah.
You're making a 10-hour movie, these limited series.
Yeah. What shows have you watched that have done that great? I mean, Broadchurch was the one that sprung to mind. I know I've seen certainly more than that.
I mean, to me, I think Breaking Bad is the perfect example of – because I think what a lot of times happens is people get into the ideation phase and they go, oh, we have all these great concepts and all these fun ideas – and then they start kind of unrolling them and laying them out without really understanding exactly where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. You know, where they throw a lot of things out there to get the audience engaged. Like, oh, what? Well, that's a whole crazy mystery thing there. That's an interesting storyline. And then at the end, I feel like there's a lot of times just sort of a cop-out where they just kind of say to the audience, like, eh! It's up to you to figure it out. Like, no, fuck you. Right. It's up to you.
You took me down this road.
You took me down this road. It's your responsibility to wrap this up in a responsible way.
You said, guess what? I said what? You have to say what? It's a social contract.
Yeah, exactly. No, but what they're saying is chicken butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They never get to chicken butt.
their answer is chicken butt. I didn't sign in here.
I didn't say what.
I said I didn't,
chicken butt.
I know that rhymes, but I am asking for resolution.
If things rhyme, that means they're true.
That means that rhymes, Mark.
That is
you
true.
You know it rhymes. But I just think that, you know, that there is a responsibility that you have to your audience, and you know... You can't just say like, well, you know, some things you just never know. Like, no, I know that's life. This is a scripted show.
That's if I wanted to feel bad about something, I just live my life.
Just turn this off and then just
walk
sit
around,
and stare out the window or go
try
on
and put
the
on shoes or whatever.
Yeah, try to put on shoes over my pants. The shoes goes over the pants, right? Mm,
I never said
what kind of weird pants do you have?
I have pants with built-in socks. I have footy pants.
Those sound fun.
So do I even need shoes is the question.
Only
do I put the shoes on?
Depends on your schedule.
Come on, don't step in a puddle.
It doesn't fit in my schedule. I don't have time for every little shoe thing.
Laces. You know how long the accumulated time it takes to put on to tie laces over the course of a year? I could brush my teeth.
23 hours calculating on this spreadsheet how much time I waste lacing my shoes every single day.
Turns out it's 22 hours.
22 hours, but today
it's a wash.
No laces on the shoes. No laces.
Are those comfortable?
They are. These.
Audience, can you see these shoes?
They're Jaws themed.
Jawsies.
Yeah, one of them has the shark, and the other one has the lady swimming.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Jennifer.
That was her name.
Probably.
Yeah.
No.
No, 50-50
Chrissy.
Shot. That's right.
I'm just Chrissy. Oh, yeah.
Let's go swimming. Guys, come on.
I'm just saying odds are pretty good.
But Jennifer. I agree. Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, Fargo did this is like the perfect combination of plot and character,
right?
The perfect mix of those things to carry all 10 or 13 or whatever, however many episodes,
right? Because they are, that is a limited run, like each season is kind of its own standalone. I feel like there are other shows. I don't know if I should say which shows don't do it well.
No, don't say that. That's why I said what shows do it well.
Yeah. That's the high road.
I've been doing this for 300 episodes, Chris.
Well, and also, you know, again, I know that it's sort of, I know that it's hard, and I know that, because I'm friends with a lot of showrunners, and I know sometimes things you plan out don't always work out because of budget or because of network direction changes.
An actor leaves.
The actor cancels.
The actors leave, or they want, or they want some sort of a different experience, or the editing, something happens in the editing process, or they didn't get a shot.
It's amazing that a show comes together to at all, let alone to be great.
Yeah. I mean, I really, it's easy to sit and watch them and go, what the fuck? Why didn't they just... But I know that if I were to make a 10-episode show, I would probably go afterwards, this is hard.
Yeah.
You know, this is really hard.
The Good Place. They did it great.
Yeah.
Did you watch The Good Place?
No.
Oh.
You got
Katie
it.
Liked it.
I love that show.
Take a break, Katie.
Katie does nothing but take breaks when we're here. She's
so excited.
The Good. What did you like about it?
It was so clever and different. I loved it.
All right, I'll watch it.
It is worth your time.
Yeah, don't find out anything about it. Just watch it cold. It's okay. Great.
And it's only like 10 episodes, 13 episodes, 13 right? Episodes.
And half hours. So that's like...
It's Mike Shore, who you love, right?
Yeah, there were a couple shows this year that I got burned on.
Was Burn Notice one of them? Rescue Me one of them? Ben, tell your Burn Notice Rescue Me joke.
They should swap titles. Just like Mr. Robot and Humans.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, Humans does that really well. Tells the 13-episode story without filler.
Yeah, that was...
It might be six of them. How many?
No, it's not. It wouldn't
maybe
be six.
Ten.
It'd be eight or ten. Yeah. Right? It'd be eight or ten. Yeah, I don't think...
I love that.
Doesn't matter. I didn't mean to correct you here on national television.
Listen, we're not on television. What? All of AMC's programming is fine. Yes, we have makeup for you. All for your feet. To put your shoes on and make yourself.
We're not fucking.
Shit.
You guys want some foot powder?
No.
Weird. It's a weird, weird thing.
You want some ankle rouge?
Sorry, the internet.
Just sort of bring out the contour of your ankle.
Don't you have an ankle rouge?
Ankle Rouge is my favorite single by Mike Furman.
That was my favorite city in Alaska.
Oh, sure.
Ankle Rouge.
Alaska.
We have time for one more. This is the worst episode of At Midnight I've ever seen.
Candy.
You know, when you can't think of something, all you have to do every time is just go, the Quickie Mart is really dope. That's what you have to do if you don't know, if you can't get a good line.
Sure. That's from Star Wars, right?
It's from...
he's never seen...
It's really pretty good movie. You should really check it out.
I'll tell you this.
Sounds
the
great.
Fun of working with Ben Acker is he's a blank slate. It's like
he's like the movie Clean Slate with Dana Carvey.
He's like
he sounds great.
Except he never knew anything. So like, I'm like, Ben,
slate.
What do you think Star Wars is? And crazy ideas come out.
What do you think Star Wars is?
It's celebrities from your local television shows have an Olympics.
They have an Olympics?
Yeah, they have like a sports.
Wait, what do you think the Olympics is?
It sounds like you're talking about Battle of the Network Stars, which was a show
Star War.
Okay, that is right? Difficult to argue. Yes, but that's a different kind of star. You're talking about celebrity stars.
Homophones are your friends.
Homophones and homonyms are your friends.
Can we bring back Battle of the Network Stars?
I feel like
there are no networks anymore, but...
Well, they kind of have that now with, like... I mean, isn't that sort of what the celebrity dance show is? And
that is true.
Dancing with the Stars. Yes. Dancing with the Star Wars.
Dancing with the Network Stars.
Dancing with the Network Stars.
Mm-hmm.
I feel
that's
like they... Well, I don't
there
know.
Are variations.
I don't know if the idea of a network star really means what it meant.
Right. It's someone slumming from movies now.
It's a movie star who wants a regular job. Movie star who just wants some job security and a regular schedule.
Wants to stay in town for a few months.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They just want to work 6 months out of the year on a regular thing and...
Say hi to the same people every day.
Say hi to the same people and focus on their family. They just want to focus on their family.
Yeah, it's nice.
Two inside. What Let is, us know. Call
not
us
at
up.
All. Call us up. The phone lines are open. Right now. Should you put rouge on your ankles is the question.
Oh, ankle rouge.
Bring them out.
It makes me so uncomfortable.
Bring out the contours.
Bring out your ankles. We'll bring the rouge.
I mean, in Victorian times, that would have been
scandalous.
So hot.
Yeah. So hot.
Oh, my God. Those fuckable ankles. Ah, that... The lateral malleolus, I believe, is the technical.
That was the cleavage.
Yeah, that was the cleavage. Ankles are the cleavage of Victorian time.
That's my favorite Doctor Who episode.
Steampunk cleavage. Ankles are steampunk cleavage, basically. Well, I think, although now cleavage is steampunk cleavage because of, you know,
bustiers.
Because of bustiers and the boosts that go in them, I guess.
Yay.
Chris, I'm sorry. I'm sorry we did this to you.
God damn it. It just reminds me of why, like, whenever I see you guys at a party, I always go right.
I'm sorry.
Oh, these dummies.
I always go right.
Let me ruin this party.
I always go right. Oh, there's Acker. He's always
careful.
Good for a party.
I feel like... All right. He's always here. I can see him.
That guy's always around.
Yeah. He's always...
I mean, he's really hanging around.
He always is. All right, thanks. I was gonna be, but at the last minute,
changed my mind.
Beard.
I got some network. I can see him from far away.
This will be as satisfying. I'll just watch him from across the room.
Yeah. Oh, he fell in something.
Watch what he does.
He fell in something. Standing in the corner, sitting
He's
in a punch
standing.
Bowl.
The only guy is to fall standing.
He's sitting in a punch bowl with socks over his shoes. That man's insane, I tell you.
Well, that's why is he hitting himself in the head with a giant hammer, telling everyone he's Napoleon and painting his tongue?
Where do you get a giant hammer?
The cartoon store.
It's on the Warner Brothers lot.
At Acme? Yeah, you can Acme. Yeah,
that's the can we take it back?
Yeah, can we go back? We're going to
Well, I don't do the name brands. I go to the
It's the bottom shelf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's all organic.
Yeah, it's
the all organic cartoon store.
These are factory defect cartoon gags. Yeah, it's the outlet.
Blessed
mall.
By a rabbi.
You go to the outlet mall. That's what you do. What else are you guys watching? What else are you guys watching that you like?
You're watching Legion?
Yes, yeah. I am watching Legion. Man. But I am, and I love it, but I'm still waiting for it to lock in. Like, oh, this is the thing that's going to happen.
Oh, I'm along for the ride.
A Legion is like 1,000% style.
Yes.
And it's gorgeous, and everyone on the show is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I love where I think it's going, but I'm still like, and I'm still super excited about it, but I'm just waiting for that like, aha!
Yeah.
You know?
I did feel...
It's so... a lot of like... Okay, I get it. He doesn't know what he's... Right. Okay, I get it. You know, like, I want to get to the thing, you know?
3 episodes in, I was sort of ready for the plot to kick in, because now we've sort of seen, you know, what this show can
they
do.
They set the table.
Yeah. And, like, I think we know the characters a lot sooner than they anticipated us knowing the characters.
Yeah.
That, like, oh, we're in it from episode one.
Yeah, but I'm definitely in.
I love it so much.
I am definitely in, and I love where it's going. And I love that we live in a world where it's just, you know, you can get essentially, you know, a comic book show.
Yeah.
I love that scene. I love the, that, I don't know why, but when they're sitting in that room in the last episode and there's just that X window behind.
Yeah.
There's just like a lot
of fun. It's so satisfying.
Yeah, it's really satisfying.
As a nerd. A superhero thing that isn't an origin story. That's nice.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Well, you know, in films, I think the origin story, and that's the other thing too, is showrunners, writers, screenwriters, script writers, script scribes.
You're new to the industry,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, script sentencers.
Mm-hmm.
But they...
Sentencemen.
The Sentencemen, starring John Hamm.
I'm in. I'd watch it.
But I think what happens is that there's a lot of legal stuff that gets in the way. Usually, I think when there are problems, it's probably business affairs, and not trying to crap on any lawyers
Tim
out there.
From business affairs.
Tim from business affairs, because you know, like that's their business is to make sure that everyone's protected, and you know, like, but it, getting in the way of that. So with origin stories, a lot of the time it has to do with licensing issues. Like, okay, we're going to relicense this, and we're going to retain the rights to this. We have to, you know, every so often. The getting around it is like we have to start the franchise over in order to lay our claim to this storyline.
But Legion is the first TV show or movie, superhero style, that didn't start with the death of Thomas and Martha Wayne. We didn't have to see slow motion pearls.
That's true. I think they'll get
through. That was a major
issue.
Slow motion pearls.
Like the scream, the shots.
Yeah.
Ben, wait till you see the finale.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So they're actually crossing universes.
Exactly.
All
of Legion, the twist ending is it's the production of Zorro.
Yes.
Bruce Wayne saw.
Spoiler. That's a spoiler alert.
Is it? Save you a bunch of time?
Sorry, everyone.
You did. No, but I am excited about Legion, and I really hope that it continues to, you know. But it's, you know, even the end credit sequence, I'm like, that just looks fun. The whole show just looks fun.
It really does.
But I just want to see some shit happen.
Sure.
It's gonna.
Are you watching Taboo?
I'm not.
No.
It's fun. Yeah.
Is it good? It's Thomas Hardy.
It's Tom Hardy. Yeah,
is he covering his mouth in this one, or
he's not?
You get the full.
He's so good.
He is really good, but he always talks like he's covering his mouth a little bit,
just a little bit. It's hard not to hear Bane, no matter what he says.
Did you see that? Is it? It's Tom Hardy, not Thomas. I'm overly formal with
him. Ed Hardy.
Did you see that Ed Hardy movie where Tom Hardy driving the car for the whole movie?
No.
Mad Max.
No, but yes.
Covered his mouth.
Yeah. Yes, and that is the best Tom Hardy and Mad Max.
Is it Drive? It's not Drive.
No, it's called... It's by the writer of Taboo, Stephen Knight.
Driving Mr. Daisy?
Yeah. It was a Mr. Mom sequel. it's by Stephen Knight, and it's like... It's compelling in ways it shouldn't be, because it really is... The whole movie is Tom Hardy driving a car... trying to get home and like explaining to his wife about this affair he had, and it takes place in real time. And
he's one of those guys that you just can't help but watch no matter what he's doing.
So good.
But Taboo is probably one of the most beautiful looking shows I've ever seen. Like whoever the set designer and the cinematographer and the director, like it's so gorgeous, and it's really fascinating. And a lot of it has to do with. He comes back to London. He's this character that everyone thought was dead, and he comes back to London because his father... I'm not spoiling anything that you couldn't just easily find out.
Don't worry. I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah, but people listen. So this is not a... I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm just giving you the pitch for the show. His father has died. He comes back to London. They all thought he was dead, and he has a claim on... And it basically, he goes to war with the East India Trading Company, takes place in 1814. It's a fun, great, great show. Cool.
Nice. We'll check it out.
Please do.
Yeah.
Well, we're taking your calls right now. Should Tom Hardy have a mask in every movie?
And should he be in every movie?
I think he should.
He really should. He really should.
You say you're taking calls, but you're looking at me like it's my decision.
Well, I want you to decide. I don't want you to feel like I'm forcing calls on you.
Should I call in?
Would you? Yeah. We'd prefer if you call in.
Ben,
just put your number
call
in.
Call me on your phone.
Yeah. All right. Hold on. Are we doing this? Mm-hmm. Am I committing to this bit?
Yeah.
All right. Audience, take a break.
we'll have Katie tighten this up.
Some kind of incidental music. Well, I put it on airplane mode for out of respect to your podcast.
I appreciate that.
All right. Chris, do I have your Hardwick? Here we go.
You're in my phone. Do you do this in here or do you go in the other room? How does this work?
Oh, usually?
Yeah.
When we take calls on your podcast?
Yeah.
I think you should step outside.
You should step in the other room.
Oh, I see.
Let's see what happens.
You were telling, not asking.
No, I was...
I'm telling.
This rug could be in Legion.
Yes.
This rug is fantastic.
Hello, you're on the Nerdist Podcast.
The question about...
You can hear him closing the door as he talks.
You're asking about Tom Hardy?
Yeah, that's right. We were asking about Tom Hardy. Should I Tom Hardy have a mask in everything?
I don't think so.
Thanks for your call.
Worth it, you guys. Worth it.
I love your show.
Great bit. Great bit. Great bit.
You'll punch that up, right?
Nope. Katie, you'll take this whole thing out, right? The entire episode.
It all stays.
Just leave in the part where I plug the show.
Spontaneation episode. Was that an hour? Did we
it's
get
it's been 45 minutes.
Oh,
it's
Jesus, like, we better start.
When do we start?
We don't.
No.
Yeah, this is the show that never starts.
Let me ask you something. So I listen to the show all the time. I'm a big fan. It's so hard to start a podcast, not to begin making a podcast, but when you're actually in the interview. I've started when I have people in the studio for the writers panel saying, this is it. This is how we start.
I don't.
Which I hate doing.
I don't start it.
I know. You just roll in.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of things that people listening, you know, that they don't know. When you're having a conversation with someone, what I realize from podcasting and seeing how people react to stuff sometimes is that, like 70% of communication with someone is not spoken. Mm-hmm. So when people come in, I can see their body language. I can see if they're looking around, if they're looking down. I can see if they – and I'm studying them the entire time to see, are they comfortable? Are they about to stop? Sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll miss and I'll jump when they're about to end. And so I cut them off, which I know frustrates people, but it's because I'm trying to anticipate. And sometimes it looks like they're about to finish and then they keep going. Mm-hmm. But for me, I never want their defense shields to go up. And when you say, it is time to start the podcast, times that I've done that, and just from times when I'm a guest, you see people's posture change. They get, like, maybe they'll put an arm in front and they become very, you know, like not aggressively defensive, but just a little defensive.
And it's unconscious.
And
it's
I don't want a formal thing. Yeah, and I don't want their armor to be up.
Yeah.
So I, Katie starts recording. Obviously, if someone says something that they that's personal or that they didn't want on the, I wouldn't sideswipe them that way. Right. But at a certain point, they realize that we've been recording and we're already talking. And by that point, they're already open to a degree. And so it just sort of, I want people to be comfortable.
Yeah. Well, you're also really good at like dropping in after a couple minutes, like, here's who my guest is.
Right.
Which I find really hard to do in a natural way, but you always make it very natural.
But yours is also, this show is so general, and this show is really sort of like, what's it like to have a coffee conversation with someone that you don't really know that much about, but you're interested in? You know, it's almost like a friend date. Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, I really like this person. I met this person at a party. I kind of want to learn more about him. Let's go.
Yeah,
I don't really know anything about you. Let's just talk and see what you're like in a conversation. But Writer's Panel is specifically about writing, so it's very directed. You can't weave all over the place. You have to kind of do that within a certain theme.
We have to stay under the umbrella of TV writing.
And so that makes it a little more interrogative.
That's true.
And not just conversational. Yeah. Even though it, you know, the conversation flows and, you know, you get people talking about stuff, but it's very much, do you have a series of questions when you?
I don't. I do feel like it's more like conducting, though, than just a free-form conversation, especially because I generally don't do, like, one or two people. I'll have three people.
And it's very much like a panel.
Yeah. And that's the fun for me, is, like, three writers who would never meet each other necessarily, who work on all different kinds of shows, coming together to talk about the thing they have in common, which is writing TV.
Isn't it strange, though, to think that because you had this idea, because you were interested in this thing, these people, you know, these kind of disparate people come together that maybe wouldn't have been together before, and then they might spark something between themselves, or someone listening, one of your listeners, like, that really is influential in a way that, you know, I mean, you, I don't know if you could really put it on a spreadsheet what the value of that number,
you
what that number
couldn't.
Is, but there is something to, like, someone will, people are legitimately learn from that. And, you know, you've definitely inspired, you know, like a generation of young writers.
That's really, thank you. It's nice to hear, and I'm always flattered when people, especially like Ben and I, will go to meetings, and it was often assistants for a long time saying, we listen to the podcast. And that's incredibly flattering, because I only did it because it didn't exist already.
Right.
And it's something I wanted to hear.
You want to learn. You want to learn about it.
Conversations, yeah. So that the fact that now, you know, it's been 5 years and people have sort of entered the business listening to it and have taken information from it is amazing.
Who surprised you the most, or what? And I don't mean surprise, like, well, this guest is going to be terrible. I just mean, like, surprised you in terms of,
I always assume that.
Surprised you in terms of, wow, I did not expect this, you know, this payload of information to come out in quite this way. Is there any that stick out to
there
you?
There have been a few. I mean, early on, Vince Gilligan was a big one. And he was one of the first one-on-one conversations I did. And it wound up going for 90 minutes just because we were enjoying
it. Vince really is a great talker. He just has such a great way about him.
To something.
He's such a good guy.
He really is. And he's thoughtful about what he does, and he wants to share that knowledge. And he came up, you know, in X-Files, which was like boot camp for all those writers. And I feel like that's the one I always recommend to people to go check out. It was the second conversation with Vince. The first one was a bigger panel. But yeah, he was one. Jenny Connor is one I think about a lot, who runs Girls, which she just, you know, I hadn't talked to many female comedy showrunners. And she just had a lot of really interesting things to say about both about Girls and about coming up in the Apatow camp and making TV in general and having a voice, even on a show that was not a show she created. That's really Lena's show.
But you know cool. what it makes you realize with this, you know, this particular medium is that literally everyone has a story.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be famous. Everyone has a story, so that if you're interested in something, no matter what it is, if you find someone who's been doing that thing for a while and you sit down and talk to them, you will probably get a non-zero amount of information that will be useful to you if you know, if you can figure out how to apply it in the right way.
I met a dancer who was turning 30, and so her career was wrapping up, like a professional ballerina and that kind of thing. And we were just talking. It was like, I'm subscribing to your podcast right now. She's like, I don't have a podcast. Get a podcast. Like somebody who does something, who cares about it, who likes it, who can speak to it. I'm totally interested in that.
Yeah, because you don't – I think there's also like interdisciplinary things that you can learn. Like someone doesn't have to be a – you know, if you're a director, you can listen to – sketch comedy people talk about sketch comedy or doctors talk about how they got through medical school. Like there are things that you can extrapolate from any discipline.
I was listening to Adam Rogers' Storyboard podcast.
Oh, Adam's great.
Right? He's great and great at it, and listen to that podcast if you don't. But we were pitching a network show and he was interviewing an architect, a San Francisco architect, and I don't need to know about architects and architecting so much. And he made that conversation about art and commerce so directly compelling to me in that exact moment.
It was... Adam Rogers is intimidatingly intelligent.
Yes.
To the extent where you're just like, oh, your brain's just going to start throbbing and you're going to levitate off the floor. And he was my editor.
You're just telling me about rum drinks. And how are we in 1490?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember he's also a tremendous nerd, so it's fine.
And
oh, yeah, you can take
sweetheart.
His lunch money like I'm
yeah,
He would just give it to you.
Yeah.
He would, because he's a nice guy, he would just give it to you. Like, I don't want you to have to go through this bully process.
Did you read his book?
About rum?
About alcohol. The science of alcohol.
The science of alcohol. Yeah. I didn't read the book.
Great.
It's great.
To anyone, like, you don't have to know anything or have an interest in science. Like, Ben doesn't understand or believe in science.
I believe it's pronounced sky.
and enjoyed the hell out of Proof, the Science of Alcohol.
All right.
Is there a book? Would you guys want to write more? I mean, this is a book. I mean, like this.
That's
is
a book.
It's like for real prose.
It's a for real book. But is there?
It does have illustrations by Annie Wu.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It has like spot illustrations. They're awesome. She killed it.
Yeah.
She's one of our favorite comics illustrators.
Do you have series in your vault of where you keep all of your work? Maybe someone would call it a hard drive.
What's that?
Oh, a hard drive is a computer thingy.
Oh, yeah. Do you have anything in your computer
thingy? I use typewriters. I'm a real Tom Hanks about it.
That's how we got on this podcast. Yeah. Sent Tom Hanks a bunch of typewriters.
No, I did that.
You sent us a bunch of typewriters?
I sent Tom
Chris,
Hanks typewriters to get
asked.
You on the podcast.
Oh, right.
It was a very roundabout
way of doing
it. You
shot the president so
that
Jodie Foster would love you.
That's right. And it...
What are you asking?
Oh, I just started watching The Americans.
Thank God.
You're
it's
welcome.
The best.
All right.
Damn, that's one I haven't watched yet. No.
If you want to do a
so
podcast about it,
good.
I'm only a couple episodes in.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, let's do a whole podcast about The Americans.
Yeah, no one would do a podcast about watching TV shows.
No one would do a show about another show, you guys. It's just not reasonable in any way. Who would do that? But do you have full series mapped out that you guys would do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've been at this for a long time, and we've sold a lot of shows, and they didn't get made into shows. We just got sold the pilots. But when we do that, we break five seasons of show. So, like, we have so many things we would like to do.
So if someone is – because I'm sure you get this question all the time. If someone has just decided, you know what? I think I really want to pursue – I really want to do this. But, you know, I work at an insurance company. It's not – you know, I have a family, but I really want to be a writer. what's my first step, knowing that I can't just quit everything and just focus on this?
Right.
Yep.
Like, look, writing is free. You don't have to live in Los Angeles to do it. Just write.
I'm not sure that's true, but okay.
Well, you don't have to.
I haven't
tried
it elsewhere.
I'm not sure writing works anywhere else outside of Los Angeles, but if you want to try it.
You don't need a computer. All you need is a pencil and paper.
That's true.
You know, like.
Oh, it's going to take forever.
And just write. Like, yeah. This is the biggest piece of advice we always give. Like, if we do panels or something, the best way to learn to write is to write. The best way to get into the business is to write something good. And the only way you're going to write something good is to keep writing. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to do 1,000 pages. You have to do 10,000 pages before you're going to be good at it. It's your eighth script that is the one that's going to hit.
And what is it about that? Is it just a question of writing, seeing what doesn't work, trying again, writing, seeing what doesn't work,
building
trying
a muscle.
Again?
Yeah, it's a craft.
Because at least in comedy, you have an immediate feedback where you can see if things are working or not. But how would you know?
I think that also people say this and we don't say this, but reading is the thing you also need to do. And As you write and write and write and write and read and read and read and read, you
and read everything.
Right.
Read scripts, read books.
But you'll be able
comics.
To see what, like, you'll be able to be a better judge of your stuff measured against other things because you'll start to see the scenes. You'll start to see the matrix of how writing works.
Mm-hmm. You'll internalize just structure and character and plot and all these important things that are hard to explain to people. And, like, that's why most writing books are not great writing books. You know, like, the best writing books are Stephen King's On Writing and Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, because they don't tell you how to write. They say, you can write. Go do it. We all have an internal sense of story. Mm-hmm. It's just the people who find the mechanical way to put it on the page who become writers.
I taught a writing class once, and there was one episode of the class where I, for 3 hours, just made them write and write and write, like,
is it because you didn't make a lesson plan that day?
No, that's the lesson plan was a ball.
Did you just refer
plan.
To that as one great. Episode of the class?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but you are a TV writer.
and they wrote a thing, and then they took a little 5 minute or whatever to read around. But they wrote for 3 hours, and at the end of it,
awful.
They loved it. I said at the end, the difference between being a writer and wanting to be a writer is you make yourself write for 3 hours instead of I make you.
Oh, that's a great. Oh, God damn it!
It's really true.
That's really true.
That was a great teacher.
Someone must have been cranky. Like, I'm really paying you to fucking make me. I could do this at home. Why don't you do this at home?
That's absolutely it.
The worst version of that, though, in the first episode of that class, another teacher from who was teaching the class down the hall,
the pilot of the class,
came over. It was the pilot came over and extolled the virtues of this book that the syllabus for the class had come from. This $15 book, he said. Everything you're going to learn in this class, he said to my class, you could get from this book. And it was a bunch of people who just spent $300 going, then why are we?
Oh,
why
are we? That sucks.
Yeah. He's dead now.
Ridiculous.
Total accident, though.
Yeah. Don't know how it happened.
I mean, you accidentally killed him.
Oh, no. I was nowhere near. He was an old man.
How many people have you killed?
What? Is this going out to the world?
No. Let's take a call. Let's take another call.
14.
The question is, how many people...
We're actually bidding. How many do you think Ben has killed?
All right. You gotta...
I mean, you know, we already did the bit once. You got to...
Yeah.
A callback.
The rule of twos.
It's actually a rule of seven or eight this time.
Oh, I see the... Phone line.
He's so mad.
About to
he hates it so much. Ben Acker has never committed to a bit. This is the first time he's committing to a bit.
It's fun
it's
because
killing
he's so
him.
Deflective. This is my forcing you to write for 3 hours.
It is killing
I think the phone lines are about to light up. Any minute now.
Hey, come, there's podcast loser.
What's the question?
How many people has Ben Acker killed?
He's not. I don't mean like. What are you looking for? None.
Round up.
Round up, like four. But
higher.
Really deserved it.
Higher.
Probably. Four and a half.
Higher.
Five.
Higher. You're running out of time.
Are we playing Joker's Wild?
Yeah.
All right, I'm just gonna play this right and say one.
That's the correct answer.
After today, it's gonna be two.
Oh, he hung up.
Surprising.
Where'd you go? You just missed our call.
Oh, you've never seen me in the collar in the same costume.
What? Oh, it never occurred to me before.
Also, are you Superman?
That was just fun. I know you did not.
I didn't have an answer. That
you
was
didn't want to get up. And
I didn't. I'm really comfortable.
You know what, though? It was a bad improv game on my part because I was asking for a specific value, and that didn't give you anywhere to go.
It's okay. I didn't take an improv class.
That's okay.
Have you taken improv classes?
I did in like 96, 97, I did Groundlings for about a year.
Groundlings, really?
And then I...
do your character.
So I did Groundlings for about a year, and then it was right around the time when I'd already done stand-up in college a bit, but I hadn't done it for a few years. And after I did improv for about a year, I was like, no, I think stand-up is really the right... You know, when you try to control every scene and you're not supposed to control a scene... as we've just witnessed, that's like really literally funny. Seconds ago. That
wait, did I do that?
No, I did that.
Are you teaching me?
Yes. Wonderful. I'm teaching you through my mistakes.
All right.
I never really went back to it.
Sorry, I tried to control the scene, Chris.
No, I tried to control the scene.
I love controlling the scene.
You're controlling the scene. Now bit. Katie's just closed her laptop because she is definitely controlling the scene.
Isn't that where the recording happens?
But I don't know. The recording happens in that little...
Explain.
That little didgeridoo.
Ghostbusters, right, ghost traps.
Nice.
So that was for me. It was realizing like, oh, I think I just like it's. It was very hard for me to rely on other people.
Sure.
Like I like taking responsibility for everything myself.
Yeah. That's really interesting to me.
I mean, but you guys, you rely on each other.
Yes.
So, when you have a writing partnership, is it, you know, like, what if you feel like writing and he doesn't feel like writing or vice versa, or he has to get something done?
Nobody ever feels like writing.
No.
I feel like writing a lot.
So you've just already contradicted each other.
No, I'm the one that feels like writing.
It's not so much feels like writing. It's more like conversations about what are we going to do next? You know,
what
like,
are your strengths?
Let's get on the page.
What are your strengths?
I can do everything.
So you can pick up a car.
Yeah. You've seen Action Comics number one.
I've seen Action Comics number one. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
When we started out, Ben Acker was sort of the big idea guy, and I understood structure, I think. But this was a long time ago. And since then, we've both sort of learned.
Where did you guys meet? And how did two people meet with almost exactly the same name?
I'm glad you asked. We're going to get this out there today, and we're never going to repeat this story.
Yes.
So here we go.
This is why I'm asking, because people will always ask.
We'll send them to the podcast.
I'm sure it's the first question when you sit down in a meeting, and they go, so you guys didn't plan this?
That is exactly
did you make this up? Can we just pitch you the fucking idea that we came
with? they don't like cutting to that.
There are not a lot of one-letter-off teams that I'm aware of that were not.
No. Well, Tom Lennon was writing with Tom Blennon for a while.
For a really long time. Yeah, and then Ben Garant.
Ben and I went to Syracuse University together, and we became friends, was it sophomore year?
Mm-hmm.
And we had been hearing about each other because we were the favorite student in these two professors' classes, and the two of them were best friends, and each of us were the favorite of one of them. And they were like, next semester we're going to switch students, switch favorites. And so
too many characters.
They were trading?
They were trading.
Yeah.
They were like, I want you to enjoy this person.
Yeah.
And so I was told, go take – was it Scotty's class?
Kathy told you, take Scotty's class.
Go take Scotty's class.
Scotty told me, if you're looking for a challenge, here's this religion class that's really hard. And I was like, well, fuck that. And so I did not take that class. And these three hung out for a semester going, whatever happened to that guy whose name is close to yours?
Yeah. Now, the crazy thing is when I was in high school, I was friends with someone who we won't name. I don't want him to get the publicity. But his cousin is named Ben Acker, this guy.
Yeah, my cousin.
And this idiot, Dan, never mentioned.
Well, you just said you were not going to name
him. I'm not going to say
his last
name.
He's not going to say Dan Bresman.
No. This idiot with whom I was friends for 4 years, I'm not saying his name is Dan Bresman. What? Find him on Facebook. Had a cousin
Heckle the Jekyll Adam.
With a name that was almost mine, and he never mentioned it.
Nor
and we
me.
Didn't know until like we had known each other for months.
Yeah,
and we were talking about someone.
We were talking about his brother.
Yeah,
can I tell you that people who are that close to a situation never occurs to them.
Yeah, I don't think that was Dan's problem.
If you drive out, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people. You know, there's Claremont, like the Claremont colleges. If you go out the 210, the next town over is called Montclair. And I made a joke about it to someone from Claremont once, and they go, "That never occurred to me." I'm like, "You live there. The next town over is just the reverse of yours."
That's really funny.
What are you talking about? So I think it doesn't really occur to people who are that close to it, but it is shockingly coincidental.
It is.
So and when did you finally meet?
We had a good laugh. When did we finally meet?
We
You were behind me in line.
Yeah, I was behind him in line. We transferred into the film program at Syracuse, and he got his materials and whatever that line was for, and had to say his name. And so I said, "Your name is Ben Blacker. That's simple. My name is Ben Acker." And he had been hearing about me for a semester. So he said, "Oh, you're an idiot." I said, "Sure."
First thing I said to him.
Yes, but... to what end? What is this regarding?
He said, it could be any number of things.
"I'll show you where we've been. We've been waiting for you."
Yeah.
And so he took me to the coffee shop, and that's where
we would
we
hang
lived
out
for the rest
and play
of
cards
college.
And cut class. And
I mean, alphabetically, you're superior in this situation.
Yeah, in height order, a whole bunch of ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Two ways. Let's say two ways.
let's say two ways.
I wrote a hit play.
Oh, are they?
Then we started writing together after college, and it has been ever since.
Did you immediately move out to Los Angeles?
I did.
You did. And then you
I finished up at Emerson College, where I took a great TV writing class, which was taught by this old Roseanne writer, which now that I know, like I've talked to so many writers, I realize Roseanne went through about 300 writers on her show.
Oh, wow.
So this teacher could have been there for a month. But she was great, and she treated the class like a writer's room. And so Ben was working as a PA on Will and Grace.
My first Hollywood job, I was a PA, and I was also – I essayed the role of Stan on the show Will and Grace.
You still get those residuals?
Mm-hmm.
You see like a $1.12 check in the mail every time.
And my friend was working for the agent that represented the showrunners. So he asked me for a TV script. And I said, "Sure." And then I said, "How do you write a TV script?" to Ben, who had written a TV script. And we got together. I flew to Boston, where all my college friends lived for some reason. And we wrote a bunch of crappy Buffy specs.
Yeah.
And it was so fast and fun.
It was really fun. They would have been fanfic these days, but they were really fun.
Did you ever put them out?
No.
Is that the key? Is just if someone doesn't have an idea to write, to just pick a show and spec it?
Well, that used to be the way it was done, was if you were a new writer, you would write a spec script of an existing show, and that's the thing that would get passed around. So we wrote Buffy, we wrote Malcolm in the Middle, we wrote Will and Grace. Like, we wrote a bunch of specs when
we
first started. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
A body-switching episode. it was really fun. I think no one read it, because it was, like, the last thing we did. But that was what we used to do. And then over the past, sort of the about 5 years ago, it started to change where people started writing original pilots as their samples. And it has been my mission on the writers panel to get that to swing back, because I think specs of existing shows are more valuable. I understand why showrunners want to read original pilots, because you're getting that writer's voice.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of being staffed on a show is emulating the showrunner's book.
Well, voice. That's also another skill, is not just – because sometimes you can tell – you know, you'll watch something and you'll go, "All the characters were really just the same person."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They all talk the same. They all, you know, they all kind of have the same vibe. They're all the same person in different clothes.
Yeah.
And to learn the skill set of coming in and writing in someone else's structure.
It teaches you voice. It obviously, you can learn structure that way, because you have to study the show.
And how
that
to work
doing.
In a room, and how to compromise.
Yeah,
and how to,
absolutely.
You know.
Pilots are so hard to write. They're so hard to write that I don't want to read a pilot by some 20-year-old kid.
Well, because also the reason that the original material didn't used to get sent around was for legal reasons, I thought. So because if someone... You know, if someone could sue if they, like, submitted an original pilot, and you're like, "Oh, my pilot's about a blackjack-dealing dinosaur," and then, like, a blackjack-dealing pterodactyl series
red
comes
light.
Out.
Because the pterodactyl's not a dinosaur.
That's right.
It isn't,
I think that
that's
was
new.
That would be the justification. Their lawyers would be like, a pterodactyl is not a dinosaur, so nice try.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different.
Yeah.
And this is... This is a two-deck blackjack, and that was like a full four shoe
really splitting hairs.
Yeah, so I think
different.
You see it totally, totally different. Your dinosaur was in Vegas. This was it. This one is in
Carson City,
Carson City, Nevada. Yeah, which
still legal,
still legal, but totally, totally different.
Yeah, different show altogether.
Yeah.
Also, this dinosaur makes meth. I think legal reasons were part of it, but I think it was also just like this is how it's been done for 60 years. So that's why they did specs of existing shows. But I think it's valuable for new writers to do both.
Really. Do you think the sitcom is dead?
No. Well, you haven't watched The Good Place.
Okay. I'm not saying it is. I'm just asking just because it's, you know, that traditional four-camera sitcom.
I think it's finally evolving. I think that's exciting. Like in the same way we saw dramas evolve, I think we're seeing comedy evolve. And I think four camera's not dead either. Like One Day at a Time on Netflix is a great four camera sitcom. It's funny and it's warm and it feels like you're watching a Norman Lear show, which you are. But, you know, it's a new version of that thing. I think, you know, like in any of these things, you hear a genre or a mode of making something is dying, but it's only because it hasn't been done well in a while.
Right, or it's evolving.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think sitcoms, The Office was a big step in evolving American sitcoms into a single camera format, and now we're getting to see the benefits of that. Like, the best shows are single camera shows.
But, because I think even the idea of a sitcom, I don't know if I would say Baskets is a sitcom, but it's that's funny as fuck. Yeah. I mean, but it's also really intense and heartfelt and beautiful.
They're borrowing from each other. Sitcoms are dramatic now, and that's what keeps them relevant. And you can have an hour that's funny.
Yeah. In the way we got to, like, I think the funny hour sort of came first, and there started to be more and more humor in Breaking Bad, in Fargo, and shows like this. And now the dramas, and I think Louis was in large part responsible for starting to meld those things where you can have real people and real stakes, like everything FX is doing on the half-hour front, is great.
Do you think that people want, you know, in an age where most people are anxious just because, you know, because
the world
is crazy and, you know, and the internet makes, you know, lets you know that everything's going to kill you and there's so much information that we're trying to process. Do you think people want a comedy experience that is an escape? Or do you think it needs to be, you know, do you think it needs to address social issues in order to allow them to process, you know, what's going on?
There's room for both.
I think we want both.
It depends on, the person and the mood and what happened that day.
Yeah. I mean, I know that the big buying trend this year is towards escapist stuff. I think it's a mistake. I think, yes, do that. But also, there's an overwhelming desire in the creative community to say something. And let's see what shows come out of that, you know?
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good.
This was a great, I think we were like an hour and 25 minutes.
This was fun.
And then we cut out the dead weight.
It's all staying in.
Can we plug something before we wrap up?
No, I'm sorry. There's no time.
It's a plug and an invitation.
A plugvitation.
All right. Well, if it involves me, then I guess that's probably okay.
You're probably working. But tomorrow, March 8th.
Yeah.
Right.
Tomorrow's a Wednesday.
Yes. Yeah, tomorrow, March 8th.
Fuck.
You have two shows.
Yeah.
We're doing a
good idea
book release party that is also a benefit for Public Counsel, which provides pro bono law services to underrepresented Los Angeles communities. It's at Largo. We've got Weird Al.
What?
Jenny Slate.
Hang on.
Doug Benson.
No, you didn't.
It is Star Wars themed because it is also the book release.
What the heck are going to do?
Hold on.
I'm going to go to it. I'm going to learn about Star Wars from our show.
I've done a lot of planning that are surprises for Acker in this show just for fun.
I think the Lucas people are going to be like, can you please stop saying you've never seen Star Wars as a joke?
Well, I think that every podcast we do, we're going to get a note from them.
This show is going to be super fun. It's crazy to me that it's not sold out yet. Michael Giacchino, who did the score for Rogue One.
Oh, I know who he is.
Is doing Star Wars-themed sea shanties.
Oh, that's great.
Janina Gavankar from Sleepy Hollow is going to sing
Blood
some stuff. True Blood. Yeah. She's going to do stuff.
I've written some Star Wars
sketches that we're going to pull out.
We'll see if they get in the show.
Sarah Watkins, our old pal Sarah Watkins.
Sarah's great.
So good. She is singing a song which I have wanted her to sing for a long time. So just going to do that. A friend of ours, Zach Sherwin, which what was his rap name?
MC Mr. Nappy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Zach, I went to Zach and said, listen, you don't have to do this, but do you think you could write a rap based on a beat that is based on the Cantina theme?
Oh, which is so in his wheelhouse.
Right? Yeah. It totally is. So he's working on that, which should be pretty great. It's going to be a really fun show.
Yeah, Zach's a fucking amazing writer. Oh, yes. My God. Some of the...
He's done songs for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which have been some of the best songs they've done. He's a funny, funny guy.
And just an incredible lyricist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fitting the lyrics into the... You know, they all fit and they're all complex, but they all make sense.
Yeah.
And there's an arc. Like, he is,
did you see these videos about that goose?
No.
A duck. It was about a duck. It was it was like a 4-part rap.
People should go look for that.
Yeah, look it up. About a duck who survived a fox attack or something like that, and him just trying to get it placed in an animal sanctuary.
He's
wonderful. Like, he's just a good
rap song about the Sphygmo manometer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that.
This is the thing that you listen to the heartbeat with. Is fucking crazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's amazing. So, like, everybody... Gabby Moreno. Do you know Gabby Moreno? She's great. She is, like, a sort of folk soul singer from South America who I saw... She did a benefit with Sarah and just killed the song that she did.
What a great lineup.
And she's coming. She's going to sing a Bowie song for us. Like, it's amazing.
I went to an escape room with Sarah Watkins and...
That's right.
Her husband Todd and Mike Furman, and it was for Mike Furman's birthday.
Is this an escape room?
Well, I mean,
get interviewed your way out of it.
Technically, no, because you can't leave. There's no way out.
It's more of a saw room.
Yeah, it's more of a saw room. That's right. I think in that dirty bathtub over there, you will find a corpse, and inside that corpse's chest cavity is a key. Which you will need to open a vat of acid to pour on your foot to melt it off so you can slide it out of.
But I just rouged that foot.
Oh, we'll do it on the non-rouge foot.
You're right.
Yeah, do it
it's
on the...
It's like Guillermo del Toro's Rube Goldberg machine.
It is. It's like Guillermo del Toro's Bed Knobs and Broomsticks. Who wouldn't watch that?
I would watch the shit out of that.
It's a little dark. I'm not in.
No, I am way
in. Well, Ben doesn't believe in magic either.
Well, it does exist. Let's just say that Guillermo's doing Bed Knobs and Broomsticks. And then
I'm pretty sure he is.
Listen, facts don't have to mean anything.
I heard it on a podcast.
That means you can source it to Wikipedia, which means it's going to happen. Guillermo del Toro's Bed Knobs and Broomsticks coming to a theater soon.
So you're saying you can't do this show?
I can't do your show. That's true. It's only because of on Wednesdays at midnight. We do 2 shows. So we do an early show and we do a late show.
Right.
So I don't get out of here till like 10 o'clock.
We can't do it at midnight on Wednesday. So.
Yeah, so sorry. We have this show to do.
Do you have to do it?
You can go to largo-la.com.
I don't actually have to do it.
Yeah, why don't you come do it at midnight?
All right.
Even though you weren't really booked before, but now that you've taken that option away from me,
that's all I want.
I don't need to be at the show, so I can totally do it.
Yeah, you can totally.
I'm doing this show for you.
I know.
It's for our anniversary.
Aw, that's so sweet.
It's our anniversary already? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, Fred Flintstone, it is.
You got me a bowling ball for our anniversary.
Yeah, I'll use it too.
I got you a Star Wars tribute show.
And I got you a size 15 shoe.
Oh, boy.
I got a rock. Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, Star Wars, Join the Resistance, is now available.
Yeah.
Wherever books are sold.
Pretty much, including Amazon.com.
Amazon.com.
Follow us on Twitter. Find out about the things we're doing. Because we want people to come to this awesome show.
Be a pal.
And we have comics and stuff coming out. So.
Yeah.
At Ben Blacker, at B.N. Acker.
Ben Acker.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, at Ben Acker.
He's a speech impediment.
Another guy has the B.E.N. and he is nice to forward things to me from time to time. People are like, great show, man. He's like, yep, thanks, here you go.
Why wouldn't he just hand over the...
You'd think. Oh. Can we use the power of Nerdist to compel him?
The power of Nerdist compels you! Can we just buy it then?
not even that?
Nope. Okay. I guess not. So we'll just go fuck ourselves.
He's a nice guy. He doesn't...
I
just think it's funny to just start a war with this poor guy. He'd be like, I didn't do anything other than have a name. Everything I'm doing is completely reasonable. Yeah.
I asked you how to start a show.
Yes.
How do you end a show?
Enjoy a burrito.
Deft.
Deft.
Thanks,
Deft
man. Fun.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Business can mean a lot of things.
For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.